You know what time it is. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Let me hear you. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No hot takes. No garbage. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No fake takes. No first takes. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
This is the Weekend Warrior Podcast, presented by WTP Sports. It's episode 62, that makes it the Milan Lucic episode, and the John Lester episode. That's right, both Milan Lucic and John Lester wore 62. Matter of fact, NHL 09 was the last NHL video game I ever bought, and Lucic does not wear 17 in that game, he actually wears 62. Interesting fun fact. Joining me today is probably the most knowledgeable sports guy I know. Well, at least football guy that I know, and baseball. My dad is joining, Mr. Lane. How's it going?
Good morning. Dad? Good afternoon. Good evening, depending on what time of the day you're listening.
That's true. Could be any time. You never know.
This is true.
So we are doing a draft tonight. It's an interesting draft. It's an interesting concept. I'm going to talk about it more once we introduce the draft. But we're going to be doing a draft in a few minutes. I do also have the three-minute drill, and we have this week in sports history as well at the end. Okay, before we start the draft, I do want to remind you that Beard Brand is a premium men's grooming company with products not only for your beard, but also for your hair and body. Do yourself a favor and head over to beardbrand.com and take care of yourself. All right, so let's get right into the draft. Here's how it works. Very simple. The draft is a snake draft, but what we're doing, what we're drafting, are games that you would like to change the outcome of. So it's not series, but it's single games that you would like to change the outcome of. So, for instance, the 2013 Bruins game against Chicago where they give up 19 goals in the last 35 seconds, clearly it sucked. But if you choose that game, you don't win the cup there. You still have to go to Chicago to win Game 7. So, I mean, you might want to choose that one because maybe you were at the game and you hated it. Who knows, right? Maybe that could be your pick because you hated it, but it still wouldn't win you the cup. So there are certainly some other ones. We're going to do 8 rounds, okay? Each one of us is going to have a pick. Obviously, it's going to be a snake draft. We're going to flip a coin to decide who goes first. So, this is, gentlemen, we have Sacagawea on one side. We have the Eagle on the other side. Sacagawea is obviously on the heads. It is not a Philadelphia Eagle, luckily. I don't think, at least. BC Eagle. That's it. All right. So, you're going to call it in the air, Dad, since you are the visiting team. Here we go.
Heads.
Heads it is. Would you like the first pick or the second pick?
I'll take the first pick.
Oh, God damn it. Okay, so we have the first pick going to my dad, and what do we got?
There's a myriad amount of games that I could pick, but probably, and I'm letting them off easy here, I will take game 6 of the 1986 World Series. When I believe that Rich Gedman cost them the World Series, despite what anybody else says. Get your body in front of the ball, you knucklehead. They should have won the game. They should have won the series. They would have won this World Series 86, 20 years before, almost 18 years before they finally did. All they had to do was get one strike.
One strike, right?
With two outs. And nobody on base, they had to get one out, and they ended up giving up 3 runs.
Yeah.
People love to blame Bob Stanley, and what's his name? The first base.
Oh, Buckner.
Bill Buckner. But I always have and always will blame Rich Gedman for not stopping a pitch that was called a wild pitch, was really a fastball.
Right. Right. If you go back and watch the video, it's clear it was obviously a pass ball. And I think, you know, I've always felt that way because you've always felt that way. And so, you know, anytime we talked about 86, I mean, I was 2, so, like, I don't remember it, obviously. But, you know, anytime we've talked about it, it's always been forget about Buckner. Obviously, everyone's seen the play with Buckner where the ball goes through his legs. You know, but Gedman had those plays where if he had made a play, you know, that guy's not on third base to score.
Yeah, if he stops the ball, and Buckner still does what he does, the game is tied.
Right. Right. That's true. So that changes the game. And clearly Buckner, but you know, the manager even left Buckner in, and Buckner was usually replaced by a defensive replacement. That's another,
Dave Stapleton always came in the seventh or eighth inning.
Right.
Because Buckner couldn't do it anymore. His feet were worse than my feet. So.
Right. Right. That's pretty bad for those of you that don't know him. So, okay, 86 World Series Game 6. I mean, that's probably one of the most iconic plays in Boston sports history. So, it's a solid number one pick. It's not what I would have picked number one. So, I'm getting my number one pick at the end of the first round, which is very exciting to me. It's Super Bowl 42. Super Bowl 42 was my pick. My first through ninth pick probably was Super Bowl 42. I think it's, in my opinion, the worst loss in the history of sports. Not because of how it was done. How it was done was awful. But the what there was riding on it, the fact that the Patriots almost went undefeated and then ended up losing anyways, I can't imagine losing in a worse fashion than that. And, you know, it's crazy, but they almost completed that. Brady almost completed that deep ball to Moss. And if, I mean, I just, honestly, I'd love to see it change just to have him completed that ridiculous Hail Mary to Moss and then win the game on Hail Mary. It would have been unbelievable. But that one, oh my God, that one hurt. That one hurt.
I saw a show today, as a matter of fact, the 10 greatest drives in the history of the NFL.
Yeah.
One of those 10 best.
Right, right. Top 10.
Usually kind of goofy things.
Yeah.
And that was number four, believe it or not. And they showed so many different things that happened in that game, in that drive, because
right.
it wasn't just the one play in the end zone. They talked about what a phenomenal pass that Manning threw. In fact, there were two people on the show that said that that was the best pass that Manning has ever thrown. The touchdown pass, the obviously the helmet catch was
luck. Luck than anything, but.
It was one of those things. That entire drive, Asante Samuel let a ball go right through his hands.
Yep. So did Brandon Merriweather.
Yeah.
Merriweather was harder. Yeah, harder catch, but yeah, even still.
Brandon Merriweather needed 5 pounds of stick'em to...
Even then, it's still suspect.
Yeah, and it would be pure luck if he held on to a ball. Asante Samuel did that for a living. He made a lot of money.
Yep.
Would have made a whole lot more money if he had caught that one.
Right. It's true.
So...
Yeah, that one's stung for sure. So, anyways, that one there, and then for my second round pick, this is tough, but I think I'm gonna go 2010, Game 7, Celtics versus Lakers. So this game, obviously Perkins gets hurt before this game, they end up losing, and you know. Losing the championship before Game 7, or I should say, you know, in Game 7, in L.A., they had a chance to win, and they would have gone, you know, obviously they don't go back-to-back here, but 2 years later, they win another championship, and now that, you know, that Pierce, Garnett, and Allen, you know, big three has two championships instead of just one, and it's the Lakers. I mean, you never want to lose in the finals to the Lakers. So, you know, that one to me... was a big one, maybe a little recency bias there, but that one hurt like hell when that happened.
Yeah, that was not being a huge basketball fan, a Celtics fan, but not a huge basketball fan. I that one bothers me, but not anywhere near as much as Sugar Bear Hamilton in '76.
Oh boy.
By far the worst. Officiating, you can have the Raider fans whine and snivel all day long about the tuck rule, if you will. That play was called correctly. The play against Sugar Bear Hamilton was called incorrectly. It would be a penalty today, but at the time it was not a penalty.
Right.
What he did, and not only that, but that knucklehead Ben Dreith, whose name will live in infamy. Dropped a hanky on, I believe it was on Michael Haynes.
I think so. Yeah.
After that, when Haynes complained about it, you know, I'm sure he said a couple of naughty words.
Right.
But you know, given the circumstances, it's understandable, and virtually never would you have someone drop a flag on that for unsportsmanlike conduct, which is what he got. That gave them half the distance to the goal. That gave him the ball on, I think, the 3-yard line.
And it was like the next play, right? He ran it in.
It was the next play. And it was with 20 seconds left, they won the game.
Right.
Without both of those penalties, the Raiders do not win the game. And I believe that maybe the 0-4 Patriots were a better team, but that was one of the best Patriot teams of all time. And had they won that game, just like the Bills, having if the Bills had won the wide right game, they would have won more than that. And and I will always believe that one.
All right, I like it.
So that's that one. Also, Marvin Hagler got screwed. Marvin Hagler got absolutely positively screwed. I don't know a whole lot about boxing. I did watch a lot of boxing up until that point, and after that I was kind of like turned off of it because Mr. Wonderful Sugar Ray Leonard smiled and got some votes that he shouldn't have gotten for points that he didn't deserve.
Right.
He did not win that fight. And the rule of thumb is if you're the champ, Marvin was the champ, you have to lose the fight.
Right.
At best.
Yeah.
And I'm being very generous to Sugar Ray at this point. But at best, that was a draw. And it was not a draw.
Right.
Sugar Ray, I should say, lost that fight. Marvin beat him.
Right.
Not by a lot, but he beat him.
Right.
And at the very, as I say, at the very least, being the champion, should have retained his crown. But
right,
he was not the pretty boy. So
that's true. That's true.
Therefore, he loses.
Well, I will say, Dad, since both of your picks involved sugar, they were pretty sweet.
Uh-huh.
Huh? So that was good. That was good. That's what you guys are here for.
Obviously. Very impressed.
Those fantastic jokes. I'm going to go with the 1975 World Series. So obviously they lose game 6. They lose game 7. They won game 6 on the Carlton Fisk, where he's waving it fair and everyone else is waving a foul and he's waving it fair and it goes, and he hits it fair obviously over the monster, and they end up losing game 7. And that right there, I mean, and again, the Fisk thing is iconic, and it's an iconic picture, and it's an iconic moment in Boston sports. But then what people don't talk about is, well, they lost the series in 75. So, yes, it was a great iconic moment, but I think it becomes elevated even more if you turn around and say, not only did we win game 6 because of that, but we went on and won game 7, and the series, and the Red Sox won their first World Series since 1908. And so that's the one I'd go with, is the 75 World Series.
Similar to the Mets winning game 6.
Right.
Of the 86 World Series.
Yeah.
What people forget about that game 6, the one in 75, was Bernie Cabo, little goofy Bernie, hit a 3-run homer to tie the game. And I believe it was the 8th inning. And he hit, I don't know what the count was. I know he had 2 strikes on him. And when he had 2 strikes on him, he foul tipped a ball. And he just barely got a piece of it. And I mean, just barely got a piece of it. And the next pitch he hit out into dead center field. And that night, Craig Gowdy invented a new word. And he did not call it the foul pole, he called it the fair pole.
The fair pole.
The left field fair pole.
That's great.
Which didn't get the traction it probably should have gotten.
No, that's
great.
I kind of like that. I like that.
Because it certainly was. If it hits the pole, it's fair. It's a home run. So.
Right, right.
So it certainly makes sense.
All right. And then for my 4th pick, I'm going to go recent here. I don't know if it's recency bias or not. I'm going Super Bowl 52 against the Philadelphia Eagles. We all remember this game just a few months ago. And, here's the thing about this game. If the Patriots win Super Bowl 52, they have 6. Brady has 6. Belichick has six. The Patriots as a franchise have six. The Steelers can't talk about, you know, we're the only franchise with six. Brady now has more Super Bowls than any player in the history of the NFL. Obviously, Ken Norton has five as well. He's not a quarterback, but he still has five. So, you know, still counts for him, clearly, right? So now Brady has more Super Bowls than anyone else. And here's the thing for me. How hard is it to get back 3 years in a row? Obviously, the last one to do it was the Bills in the 90s, and they lost all four. But for the Patriots, how difficult is it going to be for them to get back this year? And if they don't get back this year, how much longer do they have with Belichick and Brady as the coach? And if you never win another Super Bowl and you end at five, and you look at the three that they lost and you say, Jesus, like we could have had one of those. You know, and I think this year you look at it and say, they should have won that game. They really should have. They played like crap. And I think they got screwed on a few calls. But even with that, they still should have played better. Obviously, you got the Malcolm Butler situation and who the hell knows what happened there. You know, but the defense overall was just atrocious. And, you know, the offense was pretty good, obviously, until that Brady fumble. And you just, if it had happened differently, and they win that game. Brady drives him down again and scores the winning touchdown, and he gets six, and now he has another drive at the end of the game, and you're like, what? I mean, there's no question at that point he's the greatest quarterback in the history of the world, and, you know, he probably is already, but at that point he cements his legacy. No one's ever going to touch him.
I happen to have watched, oddly enough, tonight, I watched a replay of the AFC Championship game of last year. And I had forgotten all the things that happened in that game. I forgot Deion Lewis fumbling the ball after a beautiful catch, run, however right. you want to call it. Gronk was hurt in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot how incredibly, incredibly important and how terribly he's going to be missed this year, how Danny Amendola was in that particular game.
Right.
Just like all the other playoff games that he's played in, and the huge role that he played last year when Edelman wasn't here. Now, Edelman hopefully will be back this year, but that's kind of a tall task to...
Not for the first four games, he won't be.
No, but it's kind of a tall task to get back there again.
I agree.
This year. All
right, what do we got?
Well, let's see. So I've got two more that I need here. How about the 2010 Jets playoff game?
Oh God,
that's a game where was it? It seemed like only a few weeks before, and it was probably 4 or 5 weeks, if not more, before that, where the Patriots had played the Jets here on a Monday night game.
I think so, yeah.
I know it was a night game. And absolutely beat the snot out of
it. It was like 95-3, I think, was the final score.
Yeah, and they let up on him in the second quarter. It was embarrassing. And then they come out, and I thought it at the time, and I still think it now, is that the Jets' defense had stopped the Patriots the first couple of times they had the ball, and their offense did absolutely nothing. And the Patriots started marching down the field. And Tom had thrown two interceptions the entire year, threw an interception, and it was probably one of the worst passes he's thrown in his career.
Yeah.
And completely changed the game around. Completely changed the game around. And it was over. I forget now what the score of the game was.
It was a blowout. I mean, and it probably the score itself probably was closer than what we remember, because I don't think they actually got blown out. They probably only lost by...
But they were never in it.
They were never. It was never.
They were never
close.
In it after that.
Never close.
It was just like some of the games that we watched in the early 2000s when they. I can still remember the Patriots beating Cleveland on a muddy day.
Mm-hmm.
I believe this final score was 9-3.
9-3. Yep.
And you know, you'd sit there and you'd say, you know, if Cleveland's quarterback, take your pick, one of the 48 that they've had since then. Throws one pass and the defensive back for the Patriots falls down. They score and win the game.
Right. You just never
but it
believe
was
that
just
was gonna happen.
You looked at that game, you watched the two teams, and there was never a chance in the world that they were going to. Because even if they did score, the Patriots would have scored anyway. It was just.
Right.
It was a foregone conclusion before the opening coin toss.
I agree. Yep.
So that's that one.
Before you move along,
go right ahead.
Let's kind of reset here. We're halfway through our draft, okay? And so just to kind of recap, my dad has the 86 World Series. Obviously, the Buckner play, everyone remembers. The 1976 game against the Raiders with Sugar Ray Hamilton with Rough and the Passer. Marvin Hagler versus Sugar Ray Leonard. In the 2010 Jets playoff game. I have Super Bowl 42, obviously 18-1. The 2010 Game 7 Celtics versus Lakers in the finals. 1975 World Series, the game after Carlton Fisk. And Super Bowl 52, this year's Super Bowl against the Eagles. All right, Dad, lead us off in round 5.
All right, well, I'm going to go way back here. I am, oddly enough, I am old enough to be your father. But even at then, I was not around for this game. However, my father, who was as much into the Red Sox as I am into the Patriots, would tell me the 1948 baseball season ended with the Red Sox going to New York, playing a 3-game series against the Yankees in New York. The series started with the Red Sox having a 2-game lead.
Oh, no.
And as you can quite imagine, I couldn't tell you what the scores of the games were because obviously I wasn't around.
Right.
All they had to do was win one.
And they didn't.
And they didn't. So that must have been incredibly devastating considering all the circumstances. You know, the Red Sox had won in forever and ever at that point. Although at that point it was only 30 years.
Right.
And it was in New York against the Yankees.
Against the Yankees, yeah.
And they had lost 2 years before in the World Series in devastating fashion. So I would have to say that take your pick of any one of those three games.
Any one of them, yeah.
I mean, of course, for those that don't know it, in those days you won the pennant. You were in the World Series. There were
right.
No playoff games.
No playoffs.
Other than the World
so
Series.
So it was essentially the ALCS.
Correct.
Right. I mean, obviously, it didn't exist at that point, but that was the ALCS. All they had to do was win one game. It basically be like being up 3-1 in the ALCS and then losing.
Correct.
So, all right, I like it. I think I'm going to go a little bit off the board here, I think. Maybe not even off the board, but a little bit outside the box, I would say. I'm going to go with the 2005 Broncos game. And for those of you that don't remember that one, that's the Ben Watson game where Champ Bailey picked Brady off in the end zone and took it back 108 yards only to get destroyed by Ben Watson at the goal line and to clearly fumble the ball out of bounds in the end zone for only the refs to say, no, that's not possible. The ball stopped in midair and took a sharp left turn and went out exactly where he was hit by Watson and not where his momentum had carried him into the end zone and gave the Broncos the ball at the half-yard line. And so the Broncos obviously ended up scoring. They win the game. I believe they won the game by like 10. It wasn't really that close, but that play, that's a potential 14-point swing. You know, you don't give the Broncos the ball. Maybe the Patriots score on the other end. Maybe they don't. But at the very least, it's a 7-point swing. They were also screwed by an Ellis Hobbs call in the end zone where they called face guarding, even though face guarding didn't exist. They called them for face guarding in the end zone. They gave them the ball to 1-yard line again. They score a touchdown. Ellis Hobbs takes the ensuing kickoff, tries to do too much, gets hit as he's doing a spin move, fumbles the ball. They kick a field goal. So all sorts of things were going on. But that one, to me, that 05 game to me kills me. I honestly and truly believe that those 05 playoffs were rigged to get Manning a Super Bowl. Manning, coincidentally enough, lost to the Steelers as the game was going on at the same time, divisional game going on at the same time. He lost to the Steelers at home. The Broncos were a terrible team that year. My feeling is that they wanted the Broncos to walk into Indy. They would have gotten their asses handed to them. And then Indy plays whoever came out of the NFC, and it ended up being the Seahawks, who the Steelers ended up trouncing. But interestingly enough, Bettis fumbled on the goal line, and Nick Harper picked it up, was running it in, and was tackled by Ben Roethlisberger. And what a lot of people don't know is Nick Harper was actually stabbed in the leg by his wife in the week leading up to it. If Nick Harper's wife doesn't stab him in the leg, you know, maybe they end up in the Super Bowl instead of the Steelers. But, you know, kind of interesting situation there. And obviously the Steelers ended up winning that Super Bowl. I think the Patriots there could have made the Super Bowl, and then in that case they go back to back in 3 out of 4 years. I mean, that's just stupid. But that would have been awesome.
My turn here?
Nope. Sorry, I was just long winded there.
There's a shark.
I think I'm gonna go. I think I'm going Patriots again. I'm gonna go 2008 Chiefs game for me, and this is the first game of the 2008 season. So clearly they won that game. So I'm not changing the outcome as far as, you know, who won and lost, but I am changing the outcome of Brady not tearing his ACL on the second series of the game. So, you know, they go 11-5 with Matt Cassel as their quarterback. They had just gone undefeated the year before and lost the Super Bowl. Who knows what they would have done in 2008 if Brady had been healthy, and who knows what they would have done in 2009 if Brady had been healthy. So, you know, kind of those things kind of spiral all together. If Brady doesn't tear his ACL, who knows? Now, there's arguments to be made about, you know, that may have changed his workout regimen and maybe, you know, he started doing different things then. But regardless, I'd still rather have Brady for a year in 2008. So I'm going the 2008 Chiefs opening day game.
Well, I can't argue with you on that one. I will say, though, oddly enough, I find myself picking more Red Sox games than I would have suspected. I'm going to go to, again, another one that my father had mentioned to me on more than one occasion, and I have certainly seen it on more than one occasion, the 1946 World Series, the Red Sox versus the St. Louis Cardinals in Game 7 when Pesky held the ball. Although I've seen video of it now, and it doesn't really look like he held the ball all that much. I don't know whether he actually would have been able to get the guy out at all at home, possibly. If I set up the scenario, there was a runner on first, he was stealing second, and there was a single to the outfield. Pesky got the relay and hesitated for half a second, and you have to blame whoever the man was supposed to be telling him what to do. I'm assuming the second baseman.
Right. It
would have been Bobby Dorr. To tell him where to throw the ball, because I'm sure that he was expecting the runner to be on third and not trying for home, and double pumped is what he did.
Yeah.
And the runner, don't know who it was, couldn't tell you, but the runner scored from first, the winning run to win the game and the series for the Cardinals. Again, preventing the Red Sox from winning again for. My father was 62 years old. He passed away 35 years ago, a couple of days ago. And in his lifetime, never saw the Red Sox win a World Series. His family was very much involved with the Red Sox. His father had been the day-to-day manager of the ball club before World War I. And his uncle, on his mother's side, was the traveling secretary, assistant general manager of the Red Sox throughout the 40s and 50s. Father was very, very involved with the Red Sox and never saw him win.
Yeah.
So
it's crazy. A lot of stories like that, that's for sure.
Yeah. So there's one, and again, I'll have to go with Bucky Dent.
Bucky bleeping Dent.
Yeah. Wasn't a playoff game, but well, actually, it was considered. No,
yeah.
Well, it's a regular season game. Game 163 of the season,
right?
And basically a little pop fly, and it ended up being a 3-run homer that ended the game. People see that one. I can still see, obviously, that I can still see Yaz dropping to his knees as the ball hit the top of the net. Or the edge of the net, just over the wall, in disappointment. But I can also see Jerry Remy on first base, and I couldn't tell you who hit the ball, but I can still see it now. Hit a line shot to the right field, a base hit, and the sun was in his eyes. He never saw it, and he stuck his glove out, as the ball was bouncing, it took one or two bounces, and it went into his glove. He never saw it. And had it not gone into his glove, obviously Remy would have scored, and the game would have been tied. They probably would have won that game.
Right. Well, and that's another one where they had a massive lead in July and lost it down the stretch. And
thanks
then,
to Butch Hobson.
And then lose, you know? And he just, ugh.
Not really
like
Butch Hobson's fault, but he shouldn't have been playing.
Right, right. All right, so let's see. I think I'm going to go... I'm going to go 1987 Boston Celtics. I'm going to go game four here. Here's the thing about this series. They lose, I think they lost 87 pretty handedly by the Lakers. You know, kind of trounced the Celtics. But game seven is the baby skyhook game, the magic baby skyhook game. Game four, I'm sorry, is the magic baby skyhook game. If that game doesn't happen, if the Celtics win that game, it changes the entire complexion of the series. And in my opinion, they go on to win the series. And again, obviously, there's no proof of that, right? There's no way to know that. But I think, I honestly feel like if the Celtics win that game, then that's enough for them to take... You know, for them to take the rest of the series. And again, right, that puts them, that ties them 2-2 with the Lakers. Lakers won the first two at home. The Celtics then won the first one at home in game three and then lost game four, obviously 107-106. And that was the final basket. If they win that game, it's tied 2-2. By the way, they won game five also in Boston. So that, to me, obviously changes the complexion of the series. If you win all three games at home, now you force the Lakers to win both at home. And I don't know if the Lakers can do that. Maybe they can, but I don't know if they can. I think that, you know, in my opinion, that game four changed the entire complexion of the series. And again, the freaking Celtics losing the Lakers in the finals is just, there's nothing worse than that. So that's the one I'm going with. And then I think I'm going to go... It's tough because there's a lot of games that I want. I think I'm gonna do it. I think I'm gonna go with the 2003 ALCS. And here's the thing about the 2003 ALCS, right? Obviously, Aaron Boone hits the home run against Tim Wakefield, who, in my opinion, had been the best pitcher the entire playoffs. And I really felt bad for him more than anything because he had pitched so well, and then to give up a home run to flipping Aaron Boone of all people. You know, and I still remember my buddy Tom, who was my roommate in college, it was my sophomore year of college, and he's my roommate, and he was a Yankees fan. And I remember we had instant messaging back then, AIM, instant messaging back then, for those of you that are old enough to remember that, or young enough to remember that, depending on your age range. But his away message that night was like, Aaron Boone, you are an absolute disgrace to baseball and a horrendous player, but you are one lucky son of a bitch. Go Yankees. And it was just like, that's what it was. I mean, what are you going to do? And look, I understand. If the Red Sox win that series, whether they win the World Series or not, 0-4 isn't as meaningful. I understand that. But that loss really sucked. Now, obviously, the next year, you're down 3-0, you come back and win in seven games. It's unbelievable. But that loss still sucked. I don't care, you know, what happened the next year. So
it did hurt. Yeah. It did hurt, although it set up the next year.
Right.
Which is actually the next two picks I'm going to have.
Wait, hold on. We were going to do eight picks. We're going to do eight rounds. Let's do nine. What the hell?
Okay.
We're here. Let's do nine. We're changing midway. Here we go.
The next two, and the final two that I'm going to pick, changed the outcome, I believe, of what happened the next year to both teams involved. And that would be in 2010, the Bruins-Philadelphia Flyers series. The Bruins were up 3-0 and lost the series 4-3. They were up in game seven, 3-0, and lost the game 4-3.
That's just so fitting.
Pretty embarrassing. However, the next year, it spurred them on to to victory the next year.
Right.
You know, obviously not the, not that specific series doing that, but the result of that series made them a much better team the next year, and as a result, they won.
Well, I think, too, almost maybe the most important part is that they pulled the plug on Tuca early in the 2011 series, in the 2011 season, and they put Tim Thomas in instead, and he went on that unbelievable run. If they win that series, maybe they don't do that. So same thing here, you know, where you're looking at the Flyer series, I was looking at the 2003 ALCS. It's like, it sucked to lose that. And honestly, it's like one of those things where in 04, we talk about, you know, the Red Sox coming back from 3-0 against the Yankees. And it's like that stat is freaking ruined by the stupid Bruins because now we're on the stat on the wrong end. But, you know, but that's, yeah, it is. It did kind of set up the next year, like you said, just like the last year. But that one sucked. That really sucked.
It did. But not as much as the 2006 AFC Championship game in Indy.
Last round you got that. What an idiot. What am I doing?
I looked at that game and I noticed afterwards, yeah, how everybody outside of New England despises the Patriots because they are quote unquote cheaters and what have you. But Indy is the building where they pipe in music,
mm-hmm.
And deny it, and the league backs them up. They change the rules because it wasn't fair to them because they lost, as the league takes care of them. And also in that particular game, the week leading up to that game, most of the Patriots had the flu, and I've heard this from different sources. It has never been said by the Patriots because they will never,
right. They'll never admit that.
They will never admit that. But the Colts knew it, and what they did is in the second half turned up the heat in the building,
right?
To, you know, which caused the Patriots to finally run out of gas. Now, as a result of that, the Patriots decided to load up the next year.
Right.
And they went out and got some stiff by the name of Moss and another guy by the name of Welker, who I said at the time, I told the number one son here that he was more important than Randy Moss.
That's true.
And they also got some other huge help that year. You know, unfortunately, it didn't end the way we wanted it to end. At least the way I wanted it to end. I don't know about you people, but it propelled them into being one of the best teams in the history of the league. You know, they didn't finish it off, so you can't really consider them that.
Right.
I actually consider the 04 team
better.
A much better team,
right,
than the 07.
Well, defensively, they were so much better, you know.
No comparison.
Right.
No comparison. So that's my pick.
All right, I like it. So my final pick here, I'm going against LeBron James because screw LeBron. That's really why I'm going. And so there are two choices I have. It's either this year's Eastern Conference Finals or the 2012 Eastern Conference Finals. They lost both in Game 7, but I can't go this year. As much as I want to go this year, they would have gotten smoked in the finals. So at least in 2012, they have a chance against Oklahoma City. So I'm going to go 2012 Heat-Celtics series. They lost, obviously, in Game 7. You know, and that's really kind of LeBron kind of cemented his legacy that game, too, where he went toe-to-toe against the Celtics and knocked them off. And, you know, obviously they end up winning the championship that year. And maybe the Celtics win the championship. Now, maybe they don't. I don't know. But at least they get into the finals and they beat LeBron, which they were obviously unable to do since, right? They haven't beat him since, so... So unfortunately that's that, but that's what, just because screw LeBron basically. So, right. So we went nine picks, and really, I mean, the reason why we went nine rounds is because I was just unprepared and wasn't counting as we're going along, if we're being honest here. But, I'm pretty upset that you got the AFC anyways, the stupid 06 game, the last flipping round of
such. That was the bonus round.
Oh God, you idiot. All right. So, all right, so to recap here, my dad, 86 World Series, six games, World Series game six. Again, that's the Buckner/Gedman game. 1976 Sugar Bear Hamilton against the Raiders. Marvin Hagler versus Sugar Ray Leonard. 2010 Jets playoff game. That's the Bart Scott can't wait game. 1948 Red Sox last game of the season, or really last three games of the season against the Yankees. All you got to do is win one, and they lost all three. 1946 World Series, Red Sox against the Cardinals, Game 7. 1978 Bucky bleeping Dent. 2010 Flyers Series, where they lost their 3-0 lead. And again, the 2006 AFC Championship game. That one, to me, might even be... That's a huge one to me, because they played the freaking Bears. I mean, the Reds, the Patriots... I mean, Jesus Christ, they could have put me on defense and beaten the Bears, for God's sakes. They just sucked. Matter of fact, interesting fact about that that Super Bowl in 07, I guess that was January of 07 or February of 07, both games, both
the NCAA
championship and the Super Bowl, yes, both started with a kick return for a touchdown, and both teams that returned the kick for a touchdown lost. Ted Ginn returned a touchdown for...
They didn't lose. They both got slaughtered.
They
both got slaughtered.
They did, yeah. Ted Ginn returned a touchdown for Ohio State and actually sprained his ankle celebrating. and they ended up losing.
Kind of sums up everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And then Hester obviously returns it for Cleveland, for Chicago. And Chicago was so bad offensively that anytime Indianapolis scored, they would either kick it to the up back or literally kick the ball out of bounds. They'd give him the ball. They'd give him the ball at the 40-yard line multiple times and said, "You can't go 30 yards on us." And they couldn't. It was
and the Colts had no defense.
Right.
They have never had a defense.
And they were fine. They were okay at the end of the season. Playoffs. But not really, you know. So, all right. And then for me, I have Super Bowl 42. Again, that's the 18-1 game. 2010, Game 7, Lakers against the Celtics. 1975, World Series after the Carlton Fisk game. Super Bowl 52, which is this year against the Eagles. The 2005 Broncos game, the divisional game with the Ben Watson chase down. 2008 Chiefs game, Brady tearing his ACL. 1987 Celtics game 4, the baby skyhook, the magic baby skyhook. 2003 ALCS, where they lost in Game 7 to Aaron Boone. And the 2012 Game 7 East Conference Finals against LeBron and the Heat. Again, Celtics would have a chance to beat the Thunder in that series. So... we're going to have a Twitter poll up, so make sure you vote on the Twitter poll. My dad is not on Twitter or Facebook or any social media, so he'll have no idea, but I'll give him the results.
We have a flip phone.
He does.
Tells you how old I am.
Yeah, yeah. Old enough to not care he has a flip phone. So, so that's all we have for the draft. That was a lot of fun. That was fun. I enjoyed doing that. I'm pissed at myself that I forgot the AFC Championship game in 2006, but...
Thank you for forgetting that game.
What are you going to do? So that's the way it goes. So, all right, let's. I'm going to get into 3-minute drill, and Dad, you can probably sit this one out because he's not a big basketball guy. It is a basketball one, which is fitting because Marcus is a basketball guy. So, so there we go. So, I got my 3-minute drill going. Marcus, take it away. All right, so I'm going to talk about the Toronto Raptors trading DeMar DeRozan for some reason. And look, I mean, I understand the Raptors aren't going to beat LeBron. I get that. Well, LeBron's now out west. So, you know, their boogeyman is gone. I don't understand why.
And now for something a little different.
Why, especially
check. 3-minute drill. 3-minute drill,
said. He's already said multiple times he's signing in L.A. He doesn't care. He wants to go to L.A. He's not staying in Toronto. And I know Toronto looks at it and says, well, wait a second. We can give you 5 years for $190 million as opposed to Lakers, who can only give you 4 years, $141 million. I understand that. But it doesn't matter. He doesn't care about that. This whole time, this whole thing is about him getting his name out and being a superstar. Now he's going from San Antonio, who has... You know, the most popular coach in the league, maybe not the most popular coach, but certainly the most recognizable coach in the league in Popovich, to literally Canada. He literally could not be further away from the lights of Hollywood and him actually being a star. It's lunacy for them to think that they actually have a chance to re-sign him. And just the stupidity on their part is ridiculous. Now, could they beat the Celtics in a 7-game series in the East Conference Finals? Probably not. I mean, if we're being honest, I don't think they could beat the Celtics in a 7-game series. But give it a chance. What the hell? What do you get to lose? You know, and maybe it's because they can't play in, you know, in the playoffs. Maybe DeRozan wasn't going to buy in. I don't know. But I do know he had 3 years left on his deal. And yes, he had an opt-out, so theoretically he could have opted out. But again, if you're using the logic with Kawhi Leonard that you can sign him because you could give him more, even if DeRozan opts out, you're still going to be able to give him more money. So I don't understand why they're sitting there trading a guy that's been with them for a while for Kawhi Leonard. Now, they do get Danny Green, too, but I'm not sold on it. I don't know what they were thinking, to be honest with you. And to me, I wonder if they're not just saying, you know what, we're not going to do it with this roster. We're not going to do it. So let's get rid of, you know, let's get rid of DeRozan and let's trade for Kawhi. The problem is they gave up a first round pick. I don't know if it was 2019 or 2020, but it is heavily protected. So maybe if they suck, then they figure, okay, well, we'll start rebuilding through the draft. We gave them a pick, but we protected it, so we're not giving them anything really good. I don't know. I think they're nuts for trading DeRozan for a guy that really doesn't want to go there. And I can tell you, it's crazy enough that there was I heard not one person mention the Raptors as a potential landing spot for him because nobody thought the Raptors would be dumb enough to do it, and they obviously proved us wrong. So this is my timer. But anyways, bizarre. This is a bizarre thing. So all right, let's get into this week in sports history. All right, so I'm going to go chronologically, as I always do. And this time, actually, they're from the same year. How about that? And I'm going to do the first one, and actually my dad's going to do the second one. So we have the first one is July 18th, 1969. Joe Namath sells his stock in Bachelors 3 to be reinstated by Pete Rozelle. Now, if you don't remember, okay, 1969 was the date that Super Bowl 3 was played, which is the Super Bowl that he won. So this is like, you know, 6 months after.
And now for something we think you'll really like. And, this week in sports history.
Walking out with the number one held high, and it's one of the most unbelievable games ever. And, you know, maybe one of the biggest upsets ever, you know, maybe before Super Bowl 36 with the Patriots, maybe even bigger than that, right? And so we're 6 months away from that. We're 6 months after that, and Rozelle kicks him out of the league. And why does he kick him out of the league? He says, okay, you're gonna be suspended indefinitely. Because he had part ownership in Bachelors 3. Now, there are people that will argue on either side here. Okay? Rozelle said there were certain people that were associating at Bachelors 3 that they weren't crazy about. For instance, like gangsters and, you know, criminals and things like that that were there that they thought there was some stuff going on that shouldn't be going on there. And so he said, well, that's what I believe. Now, there are people that will say, yeah, I don't know if really there were any organized crime people there at all. Rozelle may have been targeting the AFL. He did the same kind of thing with Len Dawson. You know, he was targeting some AFL guys because he didn't like the AFL. Maybe that's true. I don't know. But, you know, either way, Namath kind of looked at it and said, I got a ton of money here in the NFL. I can't piss it all away just because I own this place, Bachelors 3. I'm not going to push Rozelle. I'm just going to sell my shares and come back to the NFL, which is what he did. And that was, again, July 18th, 1969.
And 2 days later, actually right around the same time, we had Apollo 11, which featured three 38-year-old Americans. Michael Collins, who sat in the command ship, Buzz Aldrin, who was the second man on the moon, and, of course, Neil Armstrong. I don't know if Michael Collins is still alive. I believe he is. I know Buzz Aldrin is still alive, and Neil Armstrong, who you really never heard of after things, very quiet, very reserved person, has since passed away. I can tell you the most incredible, absolutely incredible feeling. I tell my kids all the time, and my grandkids now, that you cannot imagine what it was like watching the space Odyssey, the entire thing from the time the countdown would come on, mm-hmm. An hour or so before a launch, between the Mercury, the Gemini, which featured two astronauts, and the Apollo, which of course featured three, that it would be on national TV an hour before each shot, and you would go through the entire thing. There would be updates all the time when there was a mission going on. It was, to me, the most incredible thing in the world. And I remember sitting in my family room with my family and my grandmother watching Neil Armstrong set foot on the moon. And I mentioned my grandmother because when she was born, man had not flown yet. There had been no powered flight. Hadn't been invented when she was born, and she watched a man walking on the moon. So it was just, an amazing, amazing time. We put our mind to something, we can do anything we damn well please to do.
That's true.
Also the same week, just for those who didn't know, Teddy Kennedy went for a swim in his car.
Oh, Chappaquiddick. But they made a movie about that.
Yes, they did. But that's another story. We'll let that go for now.
So, again, pretty good week in week in sports history. So, or pretty, I guess, interesting week in sports history for sure. Maybe not the Ted Kennedy thing, maybe not pretty cool. But I will say the Neil Armstrong thing, pretty cool. Obviously, for those of you that don't know, he did screw up what he said. He was supposed to say one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind. He obviously said one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind, which of course makes no sense because man and mankind are the same thing. But, you know, I mean, you can certainly understand and appreciate why he was a little nervous being the first guy to ever walk on the moon.
One of the funniest things about, not really funny, but one of the things about that is that for the most part, we had been trailing the Russians. The Russians tried to land on the moon, and they were going to land unmanned spaceships. And today, we cannot send a man into space because for political reasons, money-wise, whatever, we have done away with that. Well, had the spaceship that Armstrong was on, had it not been a manned spaceship, it would have crashed and burned because he had to take over and land himself, which obviously a computer could not have done.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting because, I mean, you know, they say, you know, you look at the phone that I'm holding in my hand right now, and that has more processing power than the entire control room at NASA when they flew to the moon, which is just, I mean, it's ridiculous to even think about that. But, you know, the fact that they got there and back and did it safely, it's unbelievable. And those guys are, I mean, obviously, you know, men and women, obviously, as we've seen, you know, Hidden Figures came out a few years ago. And so obviously those stories are being told as well. And, you know, the stuff that those people did is unbelievable and incalculable. As far as I'm concerned, you know, what they were able to do pretty much basically with their bare hands is unbelievable.
Most people, most of us look at professional athletes as heroes. But the people that went into space and those behind them, those that built the equipment that they used to get into space and those that designed it and guided them there and back, those are the real heroes.
That's true. Well, and I'll tell you what, and it's obviously Apollo 13 and not Apollo 11, but Apollo 13, the CO2 tank, the CO2 filter is running out, you know, got damaged for whatever reason. And, you know, they dump up, you know, it's an amazing scene. I actually show it to my students because we talk about problem solving in my class, in my math class. And, you know, they literally have to stick a round peg into a square hole. And they have like 4 hours to do it or all the astronauts are going to die. And they're like, and not only that, but you can only use the things that are physically on the ship that they're able to use. And so it's, you know, and then walking them back to the process, it's a fascinating thing. And the fact that these people are able to come up with those things is just mind blowing. So again, it's interesting. If you haven't seen Apollo 13, you have to see that. And, you know, again, Apollo 11, clearly did a little bit more for the space program, you know. But Apollo 13 is a great movie as well. So, and a little bit of embellishment there, but nevertheless. So in the movie, I mean, not that part of it, but you know, some of the infighting and the drama that was going on in the cabin was a little bit embellished. But you know, Hollywood's going to make it look interesting. So, So that's it. Does it for the show. Dad, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
It was fun. A lot of fun.
And, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was good. I was glad we were able to do it. A big thanks to Marcus for the intro song and the cuts. Make sure you check out the Boxers podcast on Mondays. Him and Wesley break down a different movie, and they give a spoiler-free review. So definitely check them out. We appreciate him doing that. You know, they're awesome. So, and thanks to MDOT and Core for the outro song. MDOT is at MDOT Boston on Instagram and Twitter, and Core is at KORE of EMS. And again, you know, it's pretty cool having our own theme song, so thank you to them. As for me, I am on Twitter at Weekend Warpod, no E's. So WKNDWARPOD. Check that out. And at WTP Lane as well. Make sure you vote as to who you think has, I guess, the better squad or the better games that you'd rather switch over. You know, who has the more, you know, and it could be that one sways you more than others. It could be I choose, you know, the Buckner play and I'll throw everything else out. I don't care. That's the only play I want changed. So it doesn't matter. Whatever you want to do, and comment on it and share it, and, you know, let's try to get some votes on it and go from there. So thanks again for listening. I appreciate it. And if you can, you know, rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. That really helps out. So I appreciate that a lot. And I will see you next week. Thanks.
Turn me up on that radio dial. It's been a while since I played, but I'm here with a smile. I'm taking jump shots, get a minute, I'm out. I'm breaking records like Bill Russell. Kid has got muscle. Being polite when I'm patting this mic. You see the city of champs coming to victory dance, buddy. It's radio talk, so turn it up when it's on. We're gonna listen and rock to what it is that you want. Warriors,
y'all need to tune in. This is a show, bro.